let's assume, at least, that word games are good for you. Here's social historian Juliet Gardner on their great period of growth, the 1920s.
People were opening up their houses so they could have house parties, weekend parties, not that you called it weekend because that wasn't smart, because that suggested you had to go to work on a Monday. Treasure hunts were terribly popular. The point about word games is the idea is that they're inclusive, but also, of course, they can kind of be exclusive. They can be a kind of a private language. And I think a lot of young people in the 20s and 30s wanted to sort of form cliques and coteries, and word games in a sense were like a password to a particular sort of society. The popular press was really taking off, and there were these circulation wars, and so of course crosswords was a way of doing that. You offered more and more generous prizes, had better and cleverer crosswords, and people learned all sorts of words that they had never even known about, things like acnestis, which was, I think, is the part of your back that you can't actually scratch.
And I hope you're by now itching to interrogate our earlier claim that world civilization was saved by the crossword puzzle, which appeared first in America in 1913 and boomed in the 20s. Compilers in Britain developed cryptic versions, but by the 1940s, we British were complaining that they weren't cryptic enough. The Daily Telegraph responded with a competition. Historian and journalist Sinclair Mackay takes up the story.
20, I think, competitors were assembled in the newsroom of the Daily Telegraph in January 1942. The challenge was to solve the cryptic crossword in under 12 minutes. A number of the competitors did, and subsequently the War Office contacted them and asked them if they would be inducted into the mysteries of Bletchley Park. Bletchley Park was the great code-breaking centre of World War II, and it was at Bletchley Park where they smashed the Enigma codes, which the Germans considered to be completely insoluble. So Bletchley Park required bright young people who were very swift and clever with crosswords and with word games, because that in itself demonstrated a certain level of lateral thinking. Also together with that was a certain kind of state of mind. They knew the immensity of the work they were doing. They knew the enormous pressure that they were under. No one could ever solve a crossword, one veteran told me, if you had a gun pointing at your head. And the same pretty much was true for codes, that you had to get into that particular state of mind that perhaps you might find in a cryptic crossword solver as well. It's intense concentration, you're shutting everything else out, and you are focusing but relaxing at the same time. It is detachment, isn't it? It's a particular skill.
Sinclair Mackay, author of The Secret Life of Bletchley Park. The crossword-solving mind. Thorough, considered, perceptive and detached. Christmas Lanker.
These higher levels, which bring in all the different aspects of words, the references, the meanings, the subtleties, they are not just a testament to how well you can speak, but also how well you can think, and in particular, how fluid your framing.
Could these properties we associate with puzzles, fluidity, detachment, analysis, be therapeutic? Dr. Emily Holmes, clinical psychologist and senior research fellow at the University of Oxford's Department of Psychiatry, has tested games in the possible treatment of people with post-traumatic stress disorder. In particular, how to help them detach from nasty flashbacks. In a simulation, healthy subjects are shown a horror film, the kind with horrid after effects. Soon after, they're asked to play one of two games. The useful effects of Tetris, a kind of animated jigsaw played against the clock, are compared with a verbal game.
What we think they do is tap into different sorts of human memory processing. The Tetris game taps into very visual memory, whereas the pub quiz game taps into verbal memory, more conceptual. It's about words and meaning. Okay, so would these two games have a different impact on the development of flashbacks to the horrible movie in the subsequent week? Simply doing something one enjoys isn't always helpful. And traumatic memory takes the form of images. So it makes sense that if you disrupt your ability to lay down image-based memory by a Tetris game, you'll get less flashbacks. Let's switch now to the verbal game. One of the important things after trauma is to be able to conceptually and verbally make sense of what happened. And what we know is that our memory is still consolidating and being laid down for approximately 6 hours after a trauma. So if we're playing, asking people to play these games at 4 hours, that's still in a stage where memory is quite malleable. And if you play a verbal game, what our prediction is that you're disrupting with the kind of conceptual processing that's needed to make sense of a sudden and distressing traumatic event.
So, in that particular case, shape games won, word games nil. We used to connect therapeutic word association games with Viennese psychiatrists, pince-nez and pointy beards. They revealed your innermost thoughts, supposedly. Those games are now the preserve of another form of madness.